All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Strength Academy Podcast. Once again, Mundo here and joined by Grayson.
How's it going, everybody?
And so we didn't really have anything specific we wanted to talk about, and we kind of left it open that way so that we could just talk about the year in review a little bit. So we wanted to kind of discuss where we've watched things grow from the beginning of the year, even the beginning of the past 2 years for the gym, and how things have progressed, and just a little bit about our just year in general and how things have gone weightlifting wise and maybe even some of the other aspects of life.
Yeah, so we've got you know, I thought it would be kind of fun to do more of a reflective podcast because we are at technically we've released 60 of these,
yeah.
58 full episodes and two minisodes. So we've been doing the podcast for about 18 months now. The gym is 2 years anniversary just a couple weeks ago. And then, I wanted to start with, kind of bursting a few bubbles for everybody that's happy to be moving into a new decade. So technically, did you know that this year will not be the start of a new decade?
It won't be the start of a new decade.
2020 is not the new decade. 2021 is.
Oh.
Because okay. There was never a year zero. We started counting at one.
Oh, I see.
So it's 1 to 11 is the first decade. So it's technically a new decade once the next year that starts with a one begins.
Okay, so 2010 is the end of the decade, not the beginning
of the
new
decade. Year of the decade, yeah. Versus the new one.
Right.
And people have always so technically the new millennium wasn't until 2001.
Oh,
but everybody freaked out in 2000. So that's a technicality. So if you want to actually somebody at your work over the next couple of days, you can say, well, technically, the new decade starts...
Actually...
Yep, I need to correct you there. According to the Farmer's Almanac, this is actually how we're counting decades, and everyone's doing it wrong. But, yeah, so we didn't start at zero. We started at one.
You started at one.
So,
yeah.
But we're going to call it a decade going back to 2010, and then we can say that it's been a decade since 2010.
Okay.
So that's kind of where we're at. So I thought it would be kind of fun to say, you know, in these first 2 years of running the gym, what are a couple of like standout things that you've kind of got seared in your brain? Like what are some of the standout moments from the last 2 years for you?
That no matter what you do, somebody's going to complain about something. Is one of like you could buy brand new equipment and somebody would complain that it didn't have something that they wanted attached to it, or like it wasn't the color they wanted, or you know, the chalk buckets didn't come in time. No.
Well, let's be real. We're complaining about the chalk buckets.
Yeah, that's true. No, I think some of the standout moments for me, weightlifting wise. I think Tyler's win at AO Series 2 here in Albuquerque was like a big one for me, because like I was rooting for him to just do well, number one, but number two, he did well enough to win the whole 81 session at AO Series 2.
And it was kind of a surprise for
us
too. Yeah,
and there was a guy that from Average Bros Gym that was had a little bit higher total than Tyler did, and he just didn't make the numbers that he needed to, and Tyler did, and you know, it all worked out for him, and things came together and on the platform, and he put together a great total. And I think for me, like being in the back, being in that kind of session, coaching in that type of session was like a huge experience for me. So I really enjoyed that. Another one was I can't really focus in on a second specific moment, but I would say that any meet that we've brought people to out of town, where you know, we're just traveling together and eating meals together and having a good time out in, you know, whatever city we're in, just being part of that community. Like I'm grateful for the people that go out to those meets to compete and are part of that aspect of the community.
Yeah, I think a couple of, you know, rather than kind of looking at a specific instance, I'm going to kind of talk more in themes here. But one of the most interesting things over the last 2 years has been seeing, because we were our tribe of lifters, you know, migrated from the CrossFit gym into our new facility.
Right.
And seeing just kind of the evolution of when we were kind of able to kind of dictate the setting and dictate the moods, just kind of the way that the community of our gym has kind of grown and evolved over the years. And we have that, you know, core group of people that came over with us, and that kind of felt like it was, you know, still the old gym for a little while, because it was still, all right, we kind of already have everybody that we know. And then just kind of over the last, you know, year or so, when we've really kind of had some, you know, some people move, some people come in, and kind of seeing the dynamics change a little bit, and just kind of seeing what the team is really growing into. And it's really cool to just see that it's, you know, we've developed this kind of pocket of people that are really focused on, you know, getting stronger and getting more technical, and just how kind of supportive and encouraging, you know, our team has become. Like, they're like weird little things that develop on their own, like the slow clap when people walk in sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Every now and then there's just like a random slow clap for somebody that we haven't, that someone hasn't seen in a week. And all of these weird little like traditions and things that have just kind of popped out of the woodwork a little bit. You know, thumb tape basketball has become a real sport for us at some point. So just kind of seeing how, you know, because I think the social dynamics are really interesting, because, you know, that's one of the things that we want, is we don't just want people coming in and being robots and just kind of like hitting their lifts, not talking and going home.
I mean, I kind of do.
So, you know, we want people to do their workouts, but like, I also recognize that, you know, this is, you know, a community thing where it's, you know, this is the time that you're not at work and you get to do something for yourself for a couple hours, and you get to see the people that you know and kind of get to have, like, cause I don't know, if I didn't have, you know, the coaching at the gym, like if I'm looking back to, you know, when I was working part time or, you know, doing any of that, you don't have a whole lot of like interaction time. And I think that a lot of people who kind of have to do desk work, or, you know, it's interactions that you're not forced to be involved in, you know, like it's the only time that you really get to choose what you're doing, and you get to choose who you spend your time with. And I just feel really grateful that there's so many people that have chosen to spend time with us and get to know each other. And it's been really interesting just to see kind of the club evolve to where it was. Some people didn't really know each other who are now great friends and hang out all the time. You know, like seeing those kind of relationships evolve, seeing people change a lot over the years, like just seeing people come out of their shells and like getting to know people better as they spend a lot more time around. It's been, I don't know, really cool from my perspective, just to kind of see everyone change over the years. And, you know, it's never the same week twice. It might be the same schedule, but it's always a little more dynamic. And that's been really cool.
I think one thing for me that I've, an observation that I've made over the past 2 years is like how people deal with setbacks. And some people deal with setbacks really well. They're resilient. They bounce back. You know, they'll encounter something like an injury, or maybe they have to go out of town for a little bit, like a couple months or extended period of time, or they'll do something that requires them to be out of the gym for a little bit, or, you know, for whatever reason, they have to take a step back from weightlifting. And the people that are more resilient will come back to the gym or stick with it, find other ways to work around their injury or their setback. And then there's people that don't, or they'll find excuses for like whatever reason that they don't want to be there anymore, or whatever, life got too busy, or there's, it just takes too much time. Or so, like, to me, it's interesting to see what types of people stick with it and which ones don't. And like the types of mindsets that create a successful outcome where people are making progress, and the types of mindsets that, you know, just keep people in the same kind of like washout loop of trying new things and just keeping going from one thing to the next. I think that's been an interesting thing that I've noticed over the years. So like the personality types that have a tendency to kind of like endure hardship and like embrace the suck type of mentality. Like those people are the people that end up sticking with weightlifting a lot of the time. And it's the people that is like, oh, this is too hard, or this isn't what I expected it to be, or this is, you know, more time consuming than I thought. Those are the people that don't end up staying. And I mean, it is what it is. The sport itself is probably geared more toward pushing people toward that pain threshold. Like being uncomfortable is part of the sport. We're sticking a giant metal bar on our throats and you know, it's choking us out with more than our body weight. And, you know, you're standing us up and then putting this over your head. Not a lot of people are interested in doing that kind of thing or sticking with that kind of thing. Some people will try it out and, you know, it's not for everybody. That,
or it's
that
fun for a little while,
or yeah,
it's more frustrating than it is fun.
Yeah, so like, I just noticed the types of personalities that are, or the, not necessarily just personalities, because there's all kinds of personalities that are involved in the sport of weightlifting, but like the mentalities that are associated with the types of people who stick with the sport and those who don't.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's, you know, it's been cool because we have kind of that low barrier to entry where anybody's welcome to come by and try it out, and, you know, sometimes people stick around, and well, most of the time they do, and then sometimes it's just not the right fit.
Yeah.
And it's been, yeah, like you said, you know, watching people kind of struggle with challenges as they come up, whether that's like a technical thing or right. breaking through like a kind of strength plateau, or, you know, tweaking a wrist and needing to train around it, and just kind of seeing and encouraging people that, you know, part of what we want you to know as an athlete is that if there's, you know, there's always something you can work on. So if it's, you know, you there something went wrong in a snatch and your shoulder isn't feeling it today, we can get awesome at pulling today. And kind of like showing people that, you know, even if you have those sort of setbacks, there's always something you can work on, and there's always you know, a way to get stronger, or a way to kind of improve. If you can't lift, you can get more flexible. If you can't do this, you can kind of always find something to be improving. And I think that those sort of lessons are the ones that you know, I try to carry into, you know, my daily things. If I'm, you know, encountering a challenge with something, it's like, okay, well, it might not be perfect today, but I'm going to find something I can get better at today.
Yeah.
So I think that's been really...
And I think, well, part of it is another thing that is like that avoidance of pain. So like people don't like the idea of being uncomfortable. So like that makes the sport hard for some people to deal with too, from a mental side. Like maybe they're physically capable of doing it. It's just mentally, it's like they don't want to go through that toughness that's required to be better at it.
Yeah, you know, there's that, you know, I think it takes a certain type of person to think that it's kind of fun to pull something so heavy you almost black out, you know, like there's those kind of you know, it's I don't know, maybe not thrill seeking, but it's something along the lines of like there's
maybe a little bit
yeah, like you're chasing those feelings, and that can be, you know, if people are endurance runners, it's, you know, that runner's high that you get, there's a lifter's high in there as well. Where if, you know, you're doing big squat workouts, there's kind of a certain amount of endorphin dump that you get.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting to see, you know, no two people are the same. So, you know, there's a reason that weightlifting is kind of a fringe strength sport, because it kind of takes that kind of want to focus on technical stuff,
right,
and willing to be discomfort and willing to push your stretching and all of these things that kind of... there's a lot more outside of the scope of just training involved, but it's been really good to see everybody grow. I'm so grateful that, you know, people are still coming in and like working with so many new people over the last couple of years, starting fresh from a non-CrossFit, you know, template. And it's, you know, teaching people to lift right the first time, and just all of the unique challenges that, you know, we've gone through as coaches of every person's different. So there's, you know, learning, you know, how to get into optimal positions for people, or new protocols for examining, you know, improving flexibility, or new methods for teaching technique. We've gotten to try a lot of new things over the last couple of years. And yeah, it's been really, I think for me as a coach, I've grown a lot more in the last couple of years now that it's just been us at the gym. And we're kind of, well, and the biggest thing for me this year is that, well, obviously getting married in February was, but, but that coincided with being able to move into coaching full time. So being able to have the last year where the majority of my attention can be spent on, you know, focusing on lifting and being fresh and prepared for everybody's sessions, I think has given me a lot of time to kind of reflect on what techniques we're using and, you know, come up with new ways of explaining things or trial and error with, you know, whatever it might be. So I think that we've kind of had to grow a lot as coaches over the last couple of years as the club has evolved and changed and we've gotten new people in and a new space and some new formatting. It's been a good couple of years and I'm really looking forward to the next one, man. I think 2020 is going to be an excellent year for the club. We've got a lot of meets to go to. Looking forward to getting some new people in and always learning new things and trying new things.
Yeah.
So as far as if we're going to continue our year in review, what sort of things outside of weightlifting have you kind of been preoccupied with this last year? Because you've been back in school full time. Is there anything from there that you've kind of found or figured out that's kind of been on your mind outside of the weightlifting context?
Not necessarily. A lot of my college classes bring up like recent issues in society. So there's been some things that I've come across that have been kind of things that have been in the background that I've been aware of, but not entirely conscious of, like fully conscious and aware of. But I think for the most part, I'm basically just building on things that I had ideas on already, and now I'm just able to reinforce or challenge those ideas in a more constructive way. And you know, when I'm looking at something, I'm more critical, or I think about it more critically. So like, for instance, one thing that I had a class on physical science, and it was weather and climate, and we were talking about whether climate change was real or not and what we thought about it, not necessarily what television program we watched thought about it or what famous, you know, person thought about it, what we thought about it, what our individual research could come up with in regards to it. And so we had to set out and do some research on whether climate change was real, whether we thought things were actually being affected by what we're doing to and on the planet. And like through my own research, through, you know, sources of data that are legitimate, like NASA and the National, you know, Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, like those types of organizations are actually conducting the science that's gathering the evidence that supports the idea that climate change is real and that it's a possible, you know, thing that we're contributing to. So when I had to write my own report on it, like it wasn't something that I had thought about a lot. I wasn't aware of it, right? But it's something that's becoming more and more prevalent because as we get new people in the gym, a lot of them are younger and younger, and they're dealing with these things head on in the sense that they're hearing more about it than we ever did when we were growing up.
I'd say that's true, yeah.
And so while I'm not sure what the level of is of like catastrophizing the situation would be, I'd say that it's important for future generations that we take a look at the way that we're treating the world around us and how we value that world. And just because we don't get to enjoy the shade of trees that we plant now doesn't mean that we shouldn't plant them. So we shouldn't just be mindful and care about our own present situation. Yes, we should. We should be mindful and present of our situation, but we should also be mindful that there's going to be generations to come after us, or there's going to be people coming after us, whether that's our children or our friends' children or our brothers and sisters, our siblings' children, you know, whoever, even genetically modified children at some point, you know. So, but there's going to be somebody that comes after us. And if we're afraid to plant trees that we'll never enjoy the shade of, then, you know, why can't we take a broader look at the world around us and be more aware and conscious of the things that we're doing in it? And to me, that was an eye opener. I think that, there's some people that might disagree with the idea of climate change, but to me, it's not an opinion. I don't believe in climate change. I just see the evidence, the facts that are starting to mount up on it. And to me, it's not like I have to be convinced. I've just taken a look at what's out there, and it just shows for itself that it's starting to become a problem. Like it's a possibility. So like, to me, that's one of the things that was big this year that a lot of people were mentioning, like more people are getting more environmentally conscious and things like that. So, and maybe in and around the gym, you know, we try to recycle, we try to do things, you know, a little bit here and there to make sure that we're doing our part not to create all this extra waste that's ending up somewhere.
Yeah. And I think it's a good example of, you know, while it's definitely gotten more steam over the last few years, and we certainly heard a lot about it this year, I think it's really interesting to hear your take that, you know, you can take something for granted that, oh, I heard on the news that this is happening.
Right.
But until you actually kind of go and do a deep dive, whether you're saying it's not happening or it is happening, you might, until you've actually gone and looked, you're just repeating somebody else's thoughts. Yeah. And you're kind of repeating those talking points. So I think that, you know, the lesson there is, you know, if you're hearing about something that is an issue, you know, really go take a look at it, because you'll be able to say, oh no, this is actually something that I'm worried about. Because I think that if you had just kind of taken the talking point of the world, it's just something that, like you said, it just stays in the back of your head.
Right.
As like, oh yeah, that's happening. But if you actually kind of go and look, it kind of opens up the, oh, okay, I understand why some people are so, you know, upset about this. Yeah. And I think that, that kind of examining things that, re-examining stuff that you just already accept as true or believe in, is that's a really good example of going and finding that kind of data.
Yeah.
It's been weird. This year, I have had freed up a lot of time because I didn't have to work the second job and I didn't have any kind of official school stuff. So I've been able to kind of read a lot more. And the biggest thing that change I made this year is I've been trying to be a little bit more diligent with meditation practice. It's something that I've tried on and off, and I've, you know, been able to hit a pretty good stride for like the second half of the year. And I think that the most interesting thing that I've gotten out of being able to kind of take that extra time to kind of just like try to be quiet is that it's not that I'm thinking any less. It's just that I'm aware of how much I'm constantly thinking.
Right.
That's been kind of a cool thing, where it's not that it's any quieter. It's just that I can recognize that it's a constant stream.
Right.
You know,
And I think that's probably what the gist of meditation teaches you, is that on some level the noise is always there. You just learn to acknowledge it, accept it, and then let it go.
Yeah. And even if it's something that, you know, you're not going to get these kind of just like, oh, I figured it out. Yeah. Like those sort of things
Eureka moments are far and few between.
Yeah, yeah. And if you meet someone that says they're enlightened, they're probably just not realizing how much they're thinking. But I think, you know, doing some of that and kind of just like spending a lot more of my time focused on what is just kind of being still and being able to kind of detach from, you know, just kind of saying, oh, it's weird that that's your thought kind of showed up today. It's been, I don't know, it's been a weird weird year in that way, where like the first, you know, it's like painful to actually try to start meditating.
Yeah,
like,
it really sucks. It's hard.
It's so bad because the thing that spurred this to me, and I don't know if anybody else ever kind of feels this way, but I'm really uncomfortable just being by myself. I'm always listening to something or reading something or playing solitaire or, you know, listening to a podcast or reading the news. I'm always consuming information. And I think that in large part, a lot of that was I was just uncomfortable being alone with myself. And that's something that I really worked on this year and I really want to double down on and work on in the new year, is just being comfortable not doing anything. Because like, I wouldn't even be able to just like sit quietly and like hang out with my cat for more than a minute, because I just get anxious. You know, I'm always feeling like I need to be doing something, and having a constant audio feed or a constant video or just always reading something, while it's presented a lot of really kind of interesting ideas to me, the trying to be more comfortable with myself has been like a really hard, kind of challenging task that I've been started a road on and need to continue in the new year.
Okay.
So that's one of the big things that's kind of stood out to me in this last year that's in our non-weightlifting related.
I think outside of school, one of the things along the lines of what you're talking about, and with it kind of coincides with meditation and things like that, but one of the things that I've kind of mulled over this past year is consciousness, what the idea of consciousness is and how it affects, you know, my perception of reality, how consciousness affects reality itself, being an conscious observer of the universe and of existence. And, you know, I've learned a few things about what consciousness kind of is and a little bit about where it comes from, but there's still not a lot of scientific evidence that shows like exactly what explains consciousness or how it comes about. But there's a few things that I've learned about the brain and how the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain work together and how they don't work together in some cases, and how, you know, one side of your brain is more logical and reasoning, it comes more naturally to it, and the other side is more creative and a little bit more feeling and touchy-feely type things. So like both sides of your brains are constantly competing for who's steering the ship and like what, how you perceive reality. And I always thought that the reasoning type of you know, logic and reasoning and that type of approach to living life was the most practical way to do things, right? And I've always tried to live my life in a way where, you know, reasoning and logic kind of took the forefront of it. But the reality is that your feeling brain controls a lot of what you do, and how you feel about things can't be reasoned with. So a problem that starts in a feeling direction can't be solved with logic. It has to have a feeling solution attached to it. So I learned that, like, even though that you can reason out a lot of things, like, oh, that makes sense not to do this, or it makes sense not to act that way, or in the moment you might actually react differently because you're feeling a certain way. And so learning to control the level of arousal that comes with certain situations, like being angry or being sad or being, you know, happy, if you focus more on not letting those emotions get out of control, because you're always going to have them. It's not a matter of like whether you're going to be happy or sad or angry. At any given point you can experience any wide range of emotions, but for me it's more about like how much am I letting those emotions get out of control for me. So like consciousness and self-control and self-discipline and things like that have been something that I've been working on, been dealing with and thinking about for this past year. And, you know, it's been a struggle sometimes, but I think overall, like, my understanding of myself has gotten better over this past year. So like, I know myself a lot better. I know how I react to things a lot more. I don't always have the best like self-control sometimes, but that's something that I do meditation and that I have these self-reflections to work on, is so that I have, so I'm a better human being next time. Next time I interact with other human beings, I'm just trying to be a better human being so that they can interact with one less, you know, douchebag in the world and then like have a, you know, have a good experience in this reality.
Well, and that's one of the things that, you know, I've always, for a long time, I would always try to remain kind of the cold, rational empiricist. And it's because that kind of like, if you just kind of say, no, emotions don't really matter, yeah, and you push them aside, you're kind of ignoring a full half of these sort of experiences. Right. So trying to, rather than like suppress all emotion, like one of the things that, you know, I've, in the time that I've been coaching, which if we're looking at the, you know, reflection of the decade, it's been almost 10 years, that I've been working with people, and the biggest kind of personal development thing for me has been like, my empathy radar is not the most finely tuned. Like, it's something I have to work really hard to put myself in other people's shoes.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't always read those situations right. I sometimes have a hard time telling what other people are feeling. And it's something that I'm happy to say I've gotten better at and definitely need to still work on.
Sure.
Because yeah, I think that, you know, I get my default setting is a little bit more towards that kind of, well, if it's not rational, don't worry about it. And yeah, like, we don't need to kind of focus on these things. But, you know, like you were talking about with, you know, trying to understand and learn more about consciousness, and specifically, which we've probably mentioned on the podcast before, but the hard problem, which is not just like what part of your brain controls this, right, but why is there experience? Like, what, like, then that there isn't a satisfactory scientific answer to why redness feels the way that it does. We know the wavelength, we know the part of the brain, we know how the optic nerve works, but the personal experience, that firsthand feeling of seeing it, is something that we can't really wrap our heads around at all. And I think that that's one of those things that kind of gives me this sense of kind of wonder, where it's like, man, that's crazy. I wonder what, like, and that, do we even have the tools to understand, like, is us being aware, like, what are the limits of our awareness? Can we know anything that's like really deep? Like, is it capable to know anything about it at all?
Right.
And kind of listening to these different perspectives and reading these books about whether it's impossible for human beings to understand the nature of consciousness, or it's just a level of science that we haven't gotten to yet, or is it built in from the ground up? And those sort of things kind of help me realize that, like, that not just rational experience matters. Like, you need to have the ability to understand people's on an emotional level. And it's been something that I had to really, really work on, is like those interpersonal skills, and like trying to be better at putting myself in like the, you know, shoes of somebody else. And it's an ever work in progress, but I'm happy to say that it does get better the more you try it. Like, the more you practice that kind of empathetic thought, or, you know, instead of just trying to shut an emotion down, really kind of just saying, like, owning it and actually trying to feel things instead of trying to push them aside, has been kind of an interesting, and at times unpleasant experience, because it's hard. It's really easy to kind of put yourself in a mode where you feel like you shut everything out and you don't have like these kind of like swings in your mood. But I'm starting to think that it's not just important to have, you know, like rational experience, because if you're kind of trying to level out everything and there's never, and you're trying to keep the lows medium and the highs medium, and you're kind of trying to just have this flat acceptance of, oh, there's that emotion, and you move on. I've kind of started to wonder, like, if it, like, I don't know, maybe maybe it's important to be like, it's more, I'm realizing it's more, it could be more important to deal with those kind of emotions, and rather than trying to shut everything off, be like, no, this is a part of it.
Yeah.
And then just owning it and really leaning in and kind of owning those times that you're depressed or those times that you're full of wonder or the times that you're happy. Cause I think that, you know, there might be like trying to shut everything down and be kind of monotone is kind of rejecting reality at a certain point. And so learning to not be ruled by your emotions, but also not to ignore them because they're an important part of the experience. And I haven't really found like a way to kind of phrase that perfectly or like, well, practice it all the time. But I'm starting to think that there's something to be learned there.
Yeah.
That rationality does it. Like there's a scratch that can't itch, right?
Yeah. I think you're right about to get the entire breadth of experience in reality, you have to have the feeling side of the brain engaged with what's going on. Because if you're just cold and calculating and reasoning all the time, that doesn't necessarily mean you'll always make the right choices or you'll make good choices or anything. It just means you'll make reasoned choices. And so, you know, we need both sides of those inputs to make the whole picture complete. And I think for me, one of the other things that I've kind of mulled over a lot this year is it has to do with kind of like allowing yourself to be okay where you're at. Right? Because we're always constantly, like, a lot of time people read, they'll say, I'm going to read 52 books in a year, or one book a week, or I'm going to do this, and they'll set a goal, and they're always looking for that self-improvement. But what happens when you don't achieve that betterment that you're looking for, right? And is it not okay that you didn't make any steps of progress this year? Like, let's say people start, we're headed toward the new year, people are going to start thinking about resolutions and things like that, and things that they want to improve in their life and be better at, and a lot of time, you know, we strive to be better than we were yesterday, but we don't always hit that mark, right? We're not always as perfect as we want to be, or as dialed in, or as focused, or as engaged in the process as we want to be. And, you know, it's okay to have setbacks, or it's okay to not hit that goal that you were aiming for. And the reason it's okay is because you can't be this perfect person that hits the ideal every single time. You just have to work with where you're at. And I think that's what happens in weightlifting sometimes. And we'll bring this back to weightlifting in a little bit, is that people want it to feel a specific way. They want their experience with weightlifting to feel a specific way. They want it to be perfect every single time. And it's not. It's not always perfect. Sometimes things are off. Sometimes you pull and it feels a little bit off, but you still have to attempt that weight, right? You still have to make the lift try to happen, because things aren't always going to feel the way they need to make it happen perfectly every time. So like when you're thinking about what you want to accomplish next year or at the end of this decade in 2020, you know, there's a lot going on. There's a new presidential election. There's the Olympics are going to happen this next year. There's going to be a lot of like competitions for us coming up locally and regionally and hopefully nationally. And there's a lot of things that we as individuals want to accomplish, and we want to improve on the last year, because that's the hope, right? That you improve over what you did last time, that you make progress. But sometimes that progress is slow going, or it's stalled out, or sometimes you even have a setback. And just remember that like where you start off isn't always where you finish. And so a lot of people, when they start, you know, they're afraid of looking stupid, or they're afraid of looking dumb. They're afraid to try that new thing. Don't be afraid to try that new thing. If you want to try out weightlifting, you want to be good at weightlifting, come in, do it. Do the small stuff that seems ridiculous, but is going to make you better in the end. You know, do those things. And when you get to the point of the year, this point of the year, and you're evaluating what you're looking back on, you're looking back on all the progress that you've made or you didn't make or where you're at, it's like, it's okay. Just start where you're at again and keep going.
Yeah, and I think that's something that warrants more reflection this year is, what I kind of want to try to think about is how do we find that balance between ambition and presentness?
Right.
And right. I don't have a satisfactory answer to that, because I feel like we need to, you know, it's like we've talked about with the will to power. It's a will to progress.
A will to progress.
You know, we want to be better than we were. We want to conquer ourselves. But if you're always caught up in what's the future going to look like, it seems to be, you know, you end up spending a lot of your time in an anxious position. Mm-hmm. Because if you're always unsatisfied with the progress you're making, or you need to move faster, or what's going to happen, and what's my 5-year plan?
Right.
Am I going to accomplish this thing? Like, I feel like those things are necessary for motivation, but I feel like they distract from the quiet contentment that doesn't require anything.
Right.
So what I kind of want to focus on in the next year is try to spend a lot more time thinking about, like, what's the bright balance between striving for improvement and being able to be content with what you have. Because I think that the problem that we make is that we want to progress, but is it that we want to progress so that we're happy?
Right.
And I think that, no, we need to progress because of the challenge and because it is difficult. But I think that if you're... So we want to separate the drive towards complexity, the drive towards mastery, from an outcome that is an emotional state. Because happiness is the... Like, if you frame happiness as, like, the end goal, is you just want to feel happy at the end of this, mm-hmm. then you're missing the chance that you could feel happy the whole time as you go through all of these challenges. So it's not that the challenge produces the emotional outcome. It's that the challenge, like, being present throughout the challenge is the happiness. And, like, there is, like, you know, so maybe trying to figure out a way to better understand this seeming... like dichotomy between the need to progress and the need to be present.
So the way I look at it is, like, if you're constantly pursuing happiness, that's like the hedonic treadmill, right? Your life is constantly at a 7, no matter what. You're always at a 7. Like, hey, how's this going? On a scale of 1 to 10, how's your love life going? Oh, it's a 7. On a scale of 1 to 10, how are your finances going? Oh, it's a 7. Oh, on a scale of 1 to 10, like, how happy are you with the car you drive? Oh, probably about a 7. So, like, that 7 is just this constant. That's where, you know, homeostasis is for a lot of people. So for me, when I think about, like, progress and things like that, it's not, I shouldn't be making progress so I can be happier. Make progress for the sake of enduring something difficult and making a strive towards something that's a challenge, right? So that way, when you achieve that, you can move on to something else and not have to say, because, like, let's say you won the lottery, right? Eventually, you'd hit a homeostasis of being back at a 7. You're not any happier or, you know, more sad than you were before you won the lottery. So, like, you'd still be at the same point. So for me, the key is to be experiencing stillness as often as possible, right? Where you have tranquility, you have peace, and you're not constantly in that state of striving. So for me, I guess what I would aim toward is having more moments of stillness in between all the chaos, as opposed to, like, chasing something specific, like, oh, I want a brand new car, or oh, I want a brand new house, or oh, I want to gain this much more. So the answer for me is wanting less of that stuff and wanting to experience more of those moments of stillness and peace, as opposed to just being like, oh, I'm going to get a new boat and go out in the lake and get, you know, hammered, and we're going to, you know, hook it all up to the truck. And just, you know, that to me, like, that's a moment of happiness, sure. But, like, that will go away as soon as that's all put away. Like, it's all done and over with. So that's just, for me, the way I put it is being timely materialistic.
So, okay. Like, you're looking at a moment in time as a almost like a material where, like, this moment of time, this moment of happiness is worth more than anything else in my experience. And you're putting a lot of value into that one moment. And so, like, we'll look at moments of time and place more value into something because, you know, we place that moment highly in our entirety of experience, but we haven't experienced everything yet. So how can you say that that's going to be the best moment or the greatest moment or your only happy moment?
Well, and that's the worry is if you're chasing a peak,
right?
You know, you might not like what's on the other side of the peak because it's not going to stay there.
Right.
So if you're trying to constantly move that up. But yeah, I think that it's really interesting, and I think that those moments of stillness that you're talking about is, you know, at the root of it, what I think a lot of people, if they reflect, is what they kind of like about the training process, is that those moments of being distracted by other things kind of get whittled down when you're able to kind of focus your attention on a single point.
Yeah.
And I think that... like, training isn't a substitute for meditation, and, you know, thinking of meditation as not, like, this thing that's going to result in a, you know, forever stillness, like a nirvana thing, but it's learning that those moments that you have, those very focused times where your thoughts aren't anywhere other than on what you're doing, doesn't actually require... The barbell is a way that you can glimpse those things. The barbell is a way that you can kind of notice that there are states of your consciousness that are undistracted and quiet. When you're in that workout where you're doing that lift, there are quiet times possible when you're focused there. But I think that that's just one way, and I think that's the way that a lot of us get it the first time. Is I know that the times that I've first kind of felt any sort of, like, quieting or, you know, being absorbed only in what I'm doing was when I started training with weights for the first time and when I started lifting a lot and, you know, weightlifting or CrossFit, like, in the middle of that Metcon, you know, 10 years ago when I was first getting into this, you know, on that, you know, 11th thruster, there isn't anything other than the pure sensation of the moment. And this kind of awareness of the breathing or the counting or whatever it is that has your singular focus. And I think that that's kind of one of the first places that I kind of noticed that there were these kind of states that you could be in where you're undistracted.
Right.
And you're just very content with where you're at. And I think that, you know, using weightlifting is kind of an in of, oh, well, those states don't have anything specifically to do with the weight on the bar or the fact that you're snatching. It just has to do with something you're focusing on. So if you can learn to have that same sort of focus on anything, whether it's, you know, breath meditation or box breathing, finding ways to improve your focus kind of gives you those same little glimpses that you get when you're training. And I think that a lot of times that's what people get addicted to, is they get addicted to that. All I was doing was lifting for an hour, and I wasn't worried about that thing that I said to my boss or that thing I'm embarrassed about. There was just me in the bar and we're lifting now. And I think, you know, so if you're wanting to kind of start a new challenge for the year, 5 minutes of meditation a week is a lot more than zero. Like, it's a, you know, like, doing 5 minutes a day is a huge difference compared to not doing it at all.
Yeah.
And, like, starting small, but learning that, you know, those content, quiet moments of focus are available not just those rare days in the gym where everything lines up, but they're a thing that you can cultivate and they're a thing that you can focus on.
Yeah.
And, you know, the... You know, I kind of joke, but, you know, there's sometimes that, you know, deadlifting kind of produces an altered state of consciousness. Your head is flushed,
yeah.
You're a little dizzy, and all of a sudden you're just kind of like in your situation, but you're not a separate guy in your head controlling your body. You're just your field of awareness for that set. You know, you're really in it. And I think that that opens up a realm of exploration that I found really interesting, and I'm looking forward to kind of continuing to look into. But yeah, I think as far as the 10 years thing goes, is I would have never guessed that I would be doing this today, having this conversation with you 10 years ago.
Yeah, I probably would have probably said the same thing. Like it was always kind of like a goal of mine to be a business owner and like to start a gym and something like that. But I didn't really say specifically that I wanted it to be like Olympic weightlifting or anything like that. I just knew that I wanted to be involved in helping other people get strong and showing other people that, you know, they can start wherever they're at and get stronger and things like that. So it's been a fantastic journey up to this point, and hopefully we continue to make it work.
Yeah, you know, and I think that this is where our age difference will kind of change, is that, you know, but like I was 19 and in Afghanistan, 10 years ago, and the just change in what my mind is like is really interesting. And yeah, like I liked working out, but I kind of liked working out because it made me feel tough, and like I liked being big, and I had like these kind of more kind of like, I don't know, machismo things going on there, sure. like being able to look back and be like, oh, that's all just kind of a display. Like, that's for somebody else. Like, you weren't doing that for you.
Right.
And just how much my life has changed in 10 years is really, it's bizarre to think about. And it kind of brings me back to, I think, what we talked about on episode 2 of this podcast 18 months ago, is like that, what is the level of continuity that we really have? You know, like it just doesn't feel like I'm the same person I was 10 years ago. I have some of that guy's memories, but the dispositions and my thought is and like what it feels like to be me just feels so different than what it felt like then. And it just kind of brings all of this weird stuff of like, when I kind of dwell on the memories that I've accumulated at that time, I just feel like a totally different person than I did 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's really strange. And I just kind of love where I've ended up. And I feel really lucky that the various, you know, billiard balls colliding into each other, cause and effect things have kind of somehow put me into this position where I get to help people do something that I'm really passionate about, and I get to spend a lot of my time thinking about things like the nature of the mind.
Yeah.
And it's just such a crazy, random, lucky thing that either of us get to do this. Like, it's like we're really lucky that we're here. And I think that, you know, I don't know, just being grateful of all of the things that have had to have happened, right?
Yeah, for
sure.
Like,
if the dinosaurs hadn't been killed by an asteroid, like, it's just one asteroid is the difference between us doing this podcast and the dinosaurs still ruling the Earth. Like, I think it's just so just insane that any of this is happening in the first place.
Yeah, that's
true. I try to carry that sense of this whole thing is nuts. In everyday experience, I always have this, like, I'm in a piece of metal on four wheels that was modeled after a chariot that the Romans used, and I'm driving around and I'm worried about Starbucks. And when you kind of take that huge view of just like, man, if I had taken a right turn instead of a left turn 15 years ago on this street, I would be living a totally different life. And just the fact that things have aligned for this to be possible in the moment we're in now is kind of enough that, you know, like, so just trying to be happy with the fact that that somehow you exist.
Yeah.
And it's terrible sometimes, and it's hard sometimes.
Yeah, there's a but uncomfortable there's, truth that goes along with being alive and existing. But, yeah, because, you know,
like, it's that, like, you know, there's never going to be, like, a perfect time.
Right.
But the fact that we're doing anything at all is crazy.
Right.
And I've been trying to be more appreciative of that.
Yeah, I mean, and if you think about the time that we're alive in, what we're capable of, what we're going to be capable of pretty soon here, I think it's a fantastic time to be alive. Like, this is...
It's the best time ever. The fact that we're alive today, we're all basically richer than kings were.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
you know,
for sure.
500 or 600 years ago, our quality of life is insane. And the fact that we get to be comfortable and choose which of the 11 coffee shops we want to get our coffee at, like, that level of choice hasn't existed for 99% of the people that have ever lived.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of outlook has helped make me less worried about, you know, like, oh, what's the future going to look like? What if, you know, weightlifting becomes really unpopular over the next 5 years? And if you're just like, well, it's just crazy that I got to do this even for a while.
Yeah, for sure.
And we'll figure it out. And wherever we end up, it's still better than not being here at all.
Yeah. I agree. No,
so,
I totally agree.
You know, even the days that are your worst, chocolate still tastes good, and water is still delicious when you're thirsty.
Yeah, we still have water.
You know, like, so there, so I don't know. I think that, you know, so this year has been a really reflective, kind of introspective time. And that's not to say that it's been easy, because there's definitely been, you know, weeks at a time that I've been so focused on the free will question or the hard problem of consciousness that I just feel like I'm losing my mind. But in the end, it always comes back. So far, I haven't completely lost my mind yet.
Yeah.
And we still get to do lots of interesting things every day. And so if you're a listener of the podcast or you're at the gym, like, I appreciate, whether we know you personally or not, you being a part of our lives, because this has been a really crazy ride, and I'm really looking forward to continuing on.
Yeah, same here. I appreciate each and every one of you that's listened to any conversation that we've had about weightlifting or philosophy. And I appreciate all of you taking this journey with us, whether you're an athlete of ours or you're somewhere remote. I appreciate that you're on that weightlifting journey and that you know the struggle just as much as we do, and that you're taking part in that process.
So don't get too caught up in your goals to kind of miss what you have. Try to find those moments where you can be quiet a little bit. And think about what it's like to be you. It's weird.
All right, y'all. Well, I think that this is our last episode of the year. So if you don't hear from us until next year, Happy New Year's, and live with no regrets, y'all.
Take care, guys.